Genesis chapter 24. Now Abraham was old, well advanced in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. So Abraham said to the oldest servant of his house, who ruled over all that he had, "Please put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. But you shall go to my country and to my family and take a wife for my son Isaac." And the servant said to him, "Perhaps the woman will not be willing to follow me to this land. Must I take your son back to the land from which you came?" But Abraham said to him, "Beware that you do not take my son back there. The Lord God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my family, and who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, 'To your descendants I give this land,' he will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. And if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be released from this oath. Only do not take my son back there." So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. Then the servant took 10 of his master's camels and departed, for all his master's goods were in his hand. And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. And he made his camels kneel down outside the city by a well of water at evening time, the time when women go out to draw water. Then he said, "O Lord God of my master Abraham, please give me success this day, and show kindness to your master Abraham. Behold, here I stand by the well of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now let it be that the young woman to whom I say, 'Please let down your pitcher that I may drink,' and she says, 'Drink, and I will also give your camels a drink,' let her be the one you have appointed for your servant Isaac, and by this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master." And it happened, before he had finished speaking, that behold, Rebekah, who was born to Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, came out with her pitcher on her shoulder. Now the young woman was very beautiful to behold, a virgin. No man had known her, and she went down to the well, filled her pitcher, and came up. And the servant ran to meet her and said, "Please, let me drink a little water from your pitcher." So she said, "Drink, my lord." Then she quickly let her pitcher down to her hand and gave him a drink. And when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, "I will draw water from your camels also until they have finished drinking." Then she quickly emptied her pitcher into the trough, ran back to the well to draw water, and drew for all his camels. And the man, wondering at her, remained silent so as to know whether the Lord had made his journey prosperous or not. So it was, when the camels had finished drinking, that the man took a golden nose ring, weighing half a shekel, and 2 bracelets for her wrist, weighing 10 shekels of gold, and said, "Whose daughter are you? Tell me, please, is there room in your father's house for us to lodge?" So she said to him, "I am the daughter of Bethuel, Milcah's son, who she bore to Nahor." Moreover, she said to him, "We have both straw and feed enough, and room to lodge." Then the man bowed down his head and worshipped the Lord. And he said, "Blessed be the Lord God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his mercy and his truth toward my master. As for me, being on the way, the Lord led me to the house of my master's brethren." So the young woman ran and told her mother's household these things. Now Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban, and Laban ran out to the man by the well. So it came to pass, when he saw the nose ring and the bracelets on his sister's wrist, and when he heard the words of his sister Rebekah saying, "Thus the man spoke to me," that he went to the man, and there he stood by the camels at the well. And he said, Come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for the camels. Then the man came to the house, and he unloaded the camels, and provided straw and feed for the camels, and water to wash his feet, and the feet of the men who were with him. Food was set before him to eat, but he said, I will not eat until I have told about my errand. And he said, Speak on. So he said, I am Abraham's servant. The Lord has blessed my master greatly, and he has become great, and he has given him flocks and herds, silver, gold, male and female servants, and camels and donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old, and to him he has given all that he has. Now my master made me swear, saying, You shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, in whose land I dwell. But you shall go to my father's house and to my family, and take a wife for my son. And I said to my master, Perhaps the woman will not follow me. But he said to me, The Lord before whom I walk will send his angel with you and prosper your way, and you shall take a wife for my son from my family and from my father's house. You will be clear from the oath when you arrive among my family, for if they will not give her to you, then you will be released from my oath. And this day I came to the well and said, O Lord God of my master Abraham, if you will now prosper the way in which I go, behold, I stand by the well of water. And it shall come to pass that when the virgin comes out to draw water, and I say to her, Please give me a little drink, a little water from your pitcher to drink. And she says to me, Drink, and I will draw for your camels also. Let her be the woman whom the Lord has appointed for my master's son. But before I had finished speaking in my heart, there was Rebekah coming out with her pitcher on her shoulder. And she went down to the well and drew water, and I said to her, Please let me drink. And she made haste and let her pitcher down from her shoulder and said, Drink, and I will give your camels a drink also. So I drank, and she gave the camels a drink also. Then I asked her and said, Whose daughter are you? And she said, The daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him. So I put the nose ring on her nose and the bracelets on her wrist. And I bowed my head and worshipped the Lord and blessed the Lord God of my master Abraham, who had led me in the way of truth to take the daughter of my master's brother for his son. Now if you will deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me. And if not, tell me, that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, These things come from the Lord. We cannot speak to you either bad or good. Here is Rebekah before you. Take her and go, and let her be your master's son's wife, as the Lord has spoken. And it came to pass, when Abraham's servant heard these words, that he worshipped the Lord, bowing himself to the earth. Then the servant brought out jewelry of silver, jewelry of gold, and clothing, and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave precious things to her brother and to her mother. And he and the men who were with him ate and drank and stayed all night. Then they arose in the morning, and he said, Send me away to my master. But her brother and her mother said, Let the young woman stay with us a few days, at least 10. After that she may go. And he said to them, Do not hinder me, since the Lord has prospered my way. Send me away so that I may go to my master. So they said, We will call the young woman and ask her personally. Then they called Rebekah and said to her, Will you go with this man? And she said, I will go. So they went away, sent away Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, Our sister, may you become the mother of thousands of ten thousands, and may your descendants possess the gates of those who hate them. Then Rebekah and her maids arose, and they rode on the camels and followed the man. So the servant took Rebekah and departed. Now Isaac came from the way of Beer, Lahai-roi, and he dwelt in the south. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field in the evening. And he lifted his eyes and looked, and there the camels were coming. Then Rebekah lifted her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from her camel. For she had said to the servant, "Who is this man walking in the field to meet us?" The servant said, "It is my master." So she took a veil and covered herself, and the servant told Isaac all these things that he had done. Then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death.
So have you, what do you think about what we just read? What is it? Do you have any questions or not questions? What do you think first about what this subject matter is about? What's addressing?
A virtuous woman.
A virtuous woman. Okay. Okay. Yes. Obedience. Oh, the servant was obedient. Yes, very important. Believe it or not, I think we'll get through this chapter today. Because we've gone through so many things already, explaining an awful lot of words, but it's very important to come to knowing words. But also, what's that number mean? Years after flood. How old was Abraham? He was 75 years old. So we're not even 400 years past when he was called and told to leave, right? How old was Abraham when Isaac was born? 100. So we add 25 to this. What do we get? I'm sorry, what? 3 what? 3 what?
392.
All right. How old was Abraham when Sarah died? 137. So we'll add 37 years to that. What do we get? 40. We're missing something here. Cool, aren't we? Is that right? All right. Now, it's funny, in this chapter, some of you have in King James, says that Abraham was old. All right. How old was Isaac when his mother died? 37. How old was Isaac when he got married? 40. So we'll just add 3. Abraham was 140, right? Is that old? Okay. How old is Shem? Oh, he was old. He's still alive, right? He's still alive. All right, so he really, kind of funny put in this way, but he really was a young man compared to Shem, right? But, you know, compared to the rest of the patriarchs, he was an old man, okay? And it's kind of interesting in Hebrew, they don't really call it, you know, see, the old English there is struck in an age, like he's crippled and old. He's only 140. Now, he lived for quite a while yet beyond that point. And we'll go there yet, because we're not there yet, right? Okay, now, we have this story that's kind of in between here. When do you think the servant was sent to these people?
when Abraham was 137, 138, 139, or 140. Okay? You know, kind of interesting here. When we take a look at Isaac's age, okay, we'll just add 3 to this. Right now, it says when he got married, right? 3 years later, right? And so we have a 2, we have a 3, and we have a 4. Now, that's when he got married. Right? So it's quite fascinating to either that the servant went there when he was 430, 140 years since the flood, or 130 years since the flood, or 132 years since the flood. Why I'm doing this, for us, keep in mind that the world was not massively populated into the billions and quadrillions and into the myriads of millions and millions. They didn't reach that figure yet, have they? All right, keep this part in mind because it's very important. I need to erase that. I don't have a thing to erase it with now. But it's interesting to note. Yes, thank you, Daniel. The reason why I'm saying this, because as we keep going on down through the history here of Abraham, there's a certain point when we get to Moses, there is a date of certain number of years that traveled from the time he left in 367 to the time the Israelites left Egypt. I'm not going to explain that today. The reason I'm doing these numbers, you keep that numbers up. The most important number, try to keep in mind, is an unusually odd number, and that's 367. It's a very important date. We'll get there as we reach to the time of Moses. All right. Now, verse 2, very interesting thing, isn't it? Puts his hand under his thigh. That's very unusual terminology, isn't it? Why would he require him to put his hand under his thigh? What is his thigh? We kind of term it as the bullocks, your hind end. I understand that. And, you know, we were looking at this in our world today. What do we think? Well, you know, somebody... But what if you have a bare bottom? Boy, you know, you really are making a commitment. All right? Unusual for us to think about that. But, and it also can refer to, in a sense, the reproduction organs. But not always. But this is what I'm telling you, these things. So when a man does that to another man, at that point in time, you are really going to have to fulfill the requirement. Because it's really something that is an oath. It's a different kind of oath. He didn't make the oath to God. He had to make his oath with Abraham. It says, Abraham called it my oath. Didn't say it was God's oath. Right? Didn't say it was Elohim's oath or Elohoi. But he says it was mine. And the very thing, you remember the time and Jacob wrestled, right? And what did the being do? Touched his thigh and the hollow of the thigh. So, and pulled it out of joint. So we know it has something to do with the leg area. We know that much. We don't have information of what it's all about, but it's kind of interesting that at that particular point in time, Isaac couldn't walk anymore. I mean, walk normal. He was really wounded for the rest of his life. And he wasn't very old. I think it was in his 40s when that took place. Jacob, rather. So he says, I will make thee swear by Yahweh, Elohim of heaven, or Eloi, Elohe of heaven, Elohe of earth. So we have this very fascinating thing about God. Do you think that God is the God of this earth? That's what it says. And also says he's the God of the heavens. right? Now, we kind of get that confused with, quote, New Testament terminologies, don't we? And we use it where it says that Satan is the god of this world. This Hebrew word is Eretz, the earth, the globe. God is the one that owns this physical earth. And it's his. Doesn't belong to anybody else. What does he say about this physical earth? That's where I walk. And we don't think of the creator of heaven and earth actually landing his feet physically on this earth and walking about. But he does. Garden of Eden, right? Walked in the Garden of Eden. Walked. God is not way off in Never Never Land, and he cannot be reached, and he cannot be heard, he cannot be seen, he cannot be understood. He says, I am the creator of this earth, and I am the creator of the heavens. And he said, you can talk to me anytime you want, and I'm going to do something. During time Moses, what did God do? He came down and talked to Moses. And we have Abraham. We're about to solve Abraham already. He came and talked, walking his feet on this earth, talked to Abraham. Okay, so the God is not way off into distance that we should not associate with him in relationship to this earth. Because why? This is where he walks. That's interesting, isn't it? Just he just walks. He's the God of heaven and the God of this earth. Not of the political things. That's something entirely different. But verse 3, it says, and I'm reading this here, and I will make thee, what does it say? Swear. Now, that's a Hebrew word. You know what the Hebrew word is? Seven. So where you get the word seven from. So whenever time he makes an oath or swear, it comes from the word seven. Interesting, isn't it? Seven's a very important number, isn't it? Creator of heaven and earth. What did he do on the seventh day?
Rested.
He rested. And so an oath, a swearing here in this particular case, is directly related to the seventh day. Because it says in Hebrew, Shabbat. The singular for the word seven, Shabbat. And so it's kind of fascinating that we look at this thing, and it means basically complete. The word Shabbat also has the meaning of complete. It is completed. And he completed on the sixth day, he what? Guled. And the sixth, because it was all completed. And he rested on the seventh day and looked back at what? All that he has created. And what did he say? Ketov. Keto, a good word. Always learn that word. Keto, good word. Yes.
Question. When Caiaphas asked Jesus to reveal himself as to who he was, I adjure you, he said. Is that the same word? To tell us who he was? Remember when he was before?
Oh, him? Yeah. I don't know if that's the same word. I've not looked in the Greek on that one. I'm sorry. I can't answer that question.
I wonder if it's the same meaning.
I don't think so, but it'd be an interesting one to look at. Interesting, but he didn't have to take an oath or a swear. That's an interesting word. That's a good question, to be honest with you. In verse 7, the latter part, he said, you know, the servant was saying, okay, what if she's not going to come? Okay, but he said, unto thee, he's called into, given a quote here that God gave to Abraham, it's unto thy seed I will give this land. Talking, Abraham was quoting the creator of heaven and earth on this one, right? He turned around and it said later, he shall send his angel. Interesting. Remember the sermon I gave about angels? Fascinating. What do angels do? They carry out the word of the Lord. That's what they're created for. They institute what God wants them to do. They're not a bunch of, you know, cupids shooting arrows. And soft and gentle and kind. There's not a kind angel, basically. When God's mad, guess who he is? He's going to send his angel to do the job for him. And they carry out his orders. We know that. We've read through this with Melech Yahweh, is it called? Or the angel of Yahweh. Now, before we go, verse 10, it's a very interesting terminology here. In all your translations, they probably have all translated as 10 camels. Does anybody have any other translation? Because that's not what it says in Hebrew. Anybody have any other? It's the word tithe. He took a tithe of the camels. Now, that means what?
One-tenth.
Okay, when you take a tithe of an animal, which one do you take? The last in a series of 10, right? So we don't know how many camels the servant actually took. One camel, two camels, three camels, we don't know. It's just a tithe of the camel he took. Not 10, because that's the wrong word here in Hebrew. We run into another word here, it has to do with the word 10, but in this particular case, so we have sometimes in our mind, you know, wow, 10 camels. Well, he might have had three. Might have had four. We don't know. I want to clarify this for you because that's what that Hebrew word is. He took a tithe of the camel. And we'll get on with that a little later because it's going to come up one more time. Verse 15. What is the lady's name? Rivka. You know what that means? Very interesting meaning. And at first you're going to say, no, that's not right. Okay. It means to ensnare. Meaning to hinder a movement or trying to stop something by tying the feet around so the person can't move. Now, we say, that's a weird name for her, isn't it? That odd meaning that she, well, we look at her life, we'll go into the next chapter about it, and we say, well, you know, she did trickery when it came to her husband by doing, you know, putting the stuff on the under Jacob's arm and around his neck, and therefore, she did what? Now, Isaac didn't know what was going on, right? Now, the voice was strained, but Isaac didn't quite get the picture. So, you got to look at this thing. Now, we will get to Rebecca for sure, I think, next chapter. Very, very important woman. Very, very important woman. We'll find out why she had to do what she did when we get there. All right? It's basically just carrying out the word of the Lord. We'll get to that a little later. I want you to just a fascinating thing about that word and her name and what it means. In verse 16, I find it very fast. This is old English. And the damsel. It's old English. You know what damsel means? It's English, 1611 English. I'm going back to 1611 English. Very interesting word. Very read my like 1611 English. They really kind of tell you what it really means. Kind of cool. You got there as what? A young woman? A young girl? 16 verse here in Old English, 1611 English, always referred to a young woman of noble birth. So when they translated it from Hebrew, not 1611 English, not modern English, because we don't think nobody's noble anymore. There's not a noble family, noble nothing anymore. Because we, as people, we look down at nobility as if they are snobbish, as if they are arrogant, as if they are, what did the French call them? Aristocrats, you know, a bunch of lousy people. Well, not saying they're not, but, you know, in 1611, What was the name of the monarch? 1611. King James. Right? So he's looked at, and they honored a woman in England, and they always had to be in those days of nobility. So it's interesting here that it's very, it does mean young lady, but it means young lady that's still a virgin, but not yet mature. In other words, she's not quite of age yet to get married, but she's awful close. And he read there where she took the candle off her shoulder. That's added in there. Have you ever watched your Eastern women when they carry something? It's on top of their head. Because, I mean, this really, no. Men can put it on their shoulder. They have a lot more muscle. And they can hold it up there. A woman? No, she got to put it on top of her head. And that gives her stability. Right? Some of you women knew when you were younger, probably had learned to walk with a book on top of your head. You know, so you learned to walk straight. Well, that wasn't just to learn a good posture. That was so you could carry a weight on top of your head. That's where the tradition started from. You could carry a weight of water, there, a weight of bushel of hay. You could carry a lot of stuff on top of your head, and you can walk straight and not, you know, bounce all over the place and fall over. So that's the reason why they had women in one time. I don't know if they do anymore. Do that. Oh, yeah? They still do that? Oh, that's cool. Now, we're going to go on to another place. Has this been kind of fascinating here? Learn a little bit more about what it says and why things are being said. Now, Rebecca's a very important lady, and so this whole chapter is about her. Little is mentioned of Abraham, except the very beginning, and little bit's mentioned about Isaac, except for the very end. Right? And then there's more talked about her in the next chapter. Every time, I know you people heard me say it before, but I'm going to say it again. Every time the Word of God uses and accentuates a particular female, pay very close attention. As much as, if not greater than, some of the very prominent men. Because their life is directly related to the Messiah. Most important person that's around, right? We won't go to Ruth today at all. That's not my job. It's my son's job anyway. Now, I want to tell you a few things about, it's interesting about, verse 22. And it came to pass that the camels had done drinking, that the man took a golden earring of half a shekel, I'm reading this one, weight, and two bracelets for her hand of 10 weight of gold. Now the word 10 is what? Tithe. He took a tithe of gold, of weight. Now we're going to talk about this thing. When we think of silver, when we think of gold, how is it weighed? I'm sorry, what? Shekels, okay. Let's move it into our time. What kind of ounces? The troy, which is 10 ounces. The troy is 10 ounces. Every troy is 10 ounces. Or a 10-ounce troy. Troy is a measurement. You heard the troy tongue, the troy ton, and the troy pound. And with that word troy is a different weight in measure. It's not like you when you measure water, or you measure straw, or you measure wheat, that's measured on, well, we have 16 ounces to the pound from ancient England. Okay? But when it comes to measuring silver and gold, the English came up with the troy. And it's actually weighed differently. As you think you got more, you really do. But you've got a different kind of weight system. Okay? It's lighter. A troy ounce is lighter than what we have an ounce when measuring, you know, how much you weigh. But with that being said, it's a tithe of, that verse is a tenth weight of gold, is a tithe of a tenth. Now, what is the shackle? What does a shackle weigh? Bexy equals 0.4 of a troy ounce. Very, very little, isn't it? Okay? Now, he said he was a half of a shekel, so for the earring, and so the half a shekel was 2 troy ounces. Now, this is for the earring. Okay? Approximately, pull out a quarter if you got one, that's about the weight of the earring of silver or mineral gold. It's about a weight of a quarter. And it's only one. If she had the other one, it would have been 2 weights of 2 quarters, approximately. Just a little bit less than that, but that's not where I'm going. But just a approximate idea. So that what these earrings were, but they were gold. Of course, they weren't just gold like we think. It was formed in for her to wear the earrings. They're very probably one of the most attractive, I assume, because Abraham had a lot of servants making all sorts of things with that gold that he had. Remember the services? He had a lot of gold, a lot of silver. So now, we'll go a little bit farther. And it takes about 60 shekels to get 1.5 troy ounces. A pound, rather. One and a half troy pounds. So we got 60. It's quite a bit to get to 1.5 pounds. Now, let's go on down here. Now, what is the weight of gold? Weight of gold is equal to a talent, which is 3,000 shekels. 3,000 shekels. It's a lot. Remember, shekels very lightweight. 0.4 of an ounce. Troy ounce. So, how much did each one of the bracelets way? .75 troy pounds. And they were put on her. She had 2 of them. He made 2 of them, right? One this one and one that one. And each one of them weighed about 50 shekels or weight. Now, it's interesting here with gold. Now, what was fascinating about it? What did her brother see? He saw those things, right? And wow, you know, they had been very beautiful. And I don't know how big or what, but you know, but I don't know much about bracelets, but they're pretty, must have been very attractive. And he caught his eye. Wow, look at this. My sister got, wow, conversation probably was, how'd you get them? Well, then she told him the story and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of interesting that we look at this thing, and now that was also a very positive thing for the family. We'll get to your point. This we're going to go through this pretty quick. It's not too very hard. But verse 24, these names came up. And you know me, I got to look at names. I'm the daughter of Bethuel, or Bethuel. The son of Melech. And she bore unto him Nahor. Or Nahor. All right? Beluach. You know what Beluach means? God destroys. Huh. Why would he have a name like that? Why would he have a name that God destroys? Okay. What does Shaddai mean? Remember what Shaddai meant? The one that does something, destroys by flood. Deluge. Shaddai means deluge, the mighty deluge. And remember when he introduced himself to Abraham, he says, I am Shaddai. I am the one that deluged. I am the one that wiped out the world that once was. See, the world to us, the flood, is ancient of days, it doesn't relate to us, therefore has no meaning to us. But not with Abraham, and not with this one who had his name was God Destroys. You know, they have remembering what God did. His ability to destroy. Now, do you think they had fear of God? Yeah, they had fear of God. A little bit different than we do today. We think it's Mother Nature doing it to us. Right? We worship a mother called nature, and, you know, she gets blamed for all sorts of things, or she gets blessed for all sorts of things, doesn't she? But what is she? Nothing. Because God is the one that creates storms, earthquakes, floods, tornadoes, droughts. All right? Okay. No, I won't go there today. And the name of the mother is what? Milcah. You know what Milcah means? Queen. Same as words Melech, or king. Milcah is queen. Very prominent woman. How many kids did she have? We'll go back and see. She had an awful lot. Now remember, we're only about 430 years from the flood. Nahor means a snorer. I guess he snored an awful lot. I haven't got a picture for that one at all. It has to do with the nostrils and snorers, but that's beside the point. I want you to turn to Genesis 22. I know we're... Genesis chapter 22. Remember, this is strange for us in this world today because, number one, we know later on in the book of Leviticus, he says you can't do this anymore. But that was some years later. It's quite funny about that. Remember Abraham said that Sarah was his sister? But he had a different mother, right? Now, it's quite common back in those days, as that was before the flood. Also quite common. You'd wind up marrying somebody. Very close relative. Verse 20, and it came to pass that after these things, that was told to Abraham, saying, behold, Melech, she has also borne children to my brother Nahor. Huz, his firstborn, Buz, his brother, Kamuel, the father of Aram, Chesed, Hazo, Pildash, Yadlath, Bethel, and Bethel begat Rachel. Now, as we keep on going, there was about 430 years, about the 120, 130, about that years after the flood. Now we're about that point. And now it says now, chapter 11, if you don't have to turn there. He says, and these are the generations of Terah. Remember what Terah means? Delay. He delayed. He stopped going on. He delayed the journey, all right? Well, he was supposed to delay the journey because it really wasn't for him. It was for Abraham. And he begat Abram, Nahor, Haran, and Horn begot Lot. Now, Haran died before his father in the land of Chaldea. And that's when he started moving. That's not the only thing that Nahor... Now, listen, verse 29 of chapter 11, 29, verse... And Abram and Noah took their wives. The name of Sarah's wife was Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran. So he married his niece. That's how close related they are. And so we may find it really strange because we live in this modern time that we wouldn't even think about marrying somebody who was that close a relative, but that's not how it was then. God changed it later as man began to multiply more upon the face of the earth, and he had a reason to do that. Okay, back to Genesis now. 24th chapter, verse 26. Doing pretty good so far. And the man, using this word, bowed. And the reason why I'm going to say it, every time I use the word bowed, I want you to make sure that what we're talking about. Bowed has been translated in many of your places of worship. And you will see as we go down here, in Old English, it also has the word worship. Bow does not mean what you think it means. It means bowing that way. Now, last week I told you what a stiff-necked person is. What is a stiff-necked person? One that doesn't bow his head. And this man bowed his head toward the ground. He bowed his head. He was still standing up. He bowed his head toward the ground. Right? And we see Abraham. When Abraham went and bought the land for his burial of his wife, what did he do? He bowed before two families. He didn't worship them. He didn't prostrate himself on the ground. He wasn't worshiping them. In Old English, as many times you might have that word, but translated as worship, it isn't. It means literally being respectful. The old-fashioned way, which is still used, by the way, in Eastern countries, that you bow before an elder or bow before your guest, and your guest will bow before you. You know, the Chinese, Japanese do that. They bow toward one another quite often. But see here in the United States of America, oh, I'm going to bow to no man or no woman. You know, that's because our attitude is stinks. But the truth is we do this because we are more arrogant than they are, at least the time of Abraham. They really respected their fellow human being with awesome respect. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, he bowed his knee and he thanked God because why? God sent his angel. Verse 32, I find it very interesting here. Go to verse 32. Verse 32, we're still in the 24th chapter. The latter part, this is what Laban did. By the way, right of hand, anybody know what Laban means? White. Okay. He's a white person. Okay. And the water to wash his feet and the men's feet with them. Now, that's kind of a custom we don't do today because, see, we got these shoes with socks. But we're going to buy Messiah time, and what did he do? He washed their feet. Why? They didn't have socks. They were dirty. And so way back, we have this, quote, tradition, end of quote, which really isn't a tradition. It's the way you treat your guest. Okay? We don't think about that in our modern time, in our modern world, because we don't think of guests that way. Sometimes we think our guests are intruding upon us. But they do. When the guest comes, they travel for a long distance, their feet are dirty, and therefore you give them water to wash their feet, or in some cases with the Messiah, he washed their feet. Because you'd actually have a servant. If you, like Laban, would have had his servants, Laban had servants, would have washed the feet of Abraham's servant and the men that were with the servant of Abraham. They would just do that. You know, our world says, weird. Okay. I want to drop down. Oh, here, verse 52. I don't know where some of your translations have it. But here now, the servant does something different. Okay. When Laban and his father understood something, they said, we can't speak good or evil. What did he do? He says, take Rachel with you. Go with her. Let her be your master's son. She's still a very young lady. She wasn't an 88-year-old lady. She wasn't a 16-year-old girl either. She was a young woman, ready for marriage. And remember, it says very specifically there, she knew no man. So they specifically was not of age, quote, to know any man anyway. But that's beside the point. As it came to pass that when Abram's servant heard their words, he now bowed before Yahuwah to the earth. Now it's a prostrated position. When that way to the earth, and he bowed to the earth, he's going down to the earth. Why do you go down to the earth for? Many times you probably have seen people look up. Well, that's fine. But there's another one that has to do with the earth. Why is the earth so important to God? Throw it?
It's his.
What came up out of the ground?
What he made.
Get that out. Right. All right. So it was as admitting that where you came from. They didn't have the theory of evolution to fight. It didn't exist. They knew where they came from. And they knew where they were going to go. Okay. So you are submitting yourself, in a sense, to the ground. Or what's called in English, 1611 English, the bottomless pit. The bottomless pit means the grave. You're going to go back into the ground where you came from. And the earth is never filled. It's always wanting more. The earth could take every human being now and still be empty. Because it wants more. I mean, it could have more. The earth could take all life on the face of the earth and take it. Take it back. Now, you don't think it can't take it back? What did Genesis 1 tell you? All right. Up out of the earth came the trees and the plants. Up out of the ground came the animals and man. All right? Where did heaven come from? Up out of the water that was separated. Came up from this earth. Then we have water that's above, and we have the air that's in between, called the firmament. Then we have the waters on the earth. Now, where else would you think God is at? Is he out of that realm? Or is he in that realm? Is he part of his creation? Or is he just created and says, okay, you guys are on your own. I'm leaving. No, not really. He's very much active. And we get the book of Revelation says, I'm going to destroy those who destroy my earth. I guess earth is very important to him. Don't you think so? He didn't say, I'm going to destroy those who destroy my heaven. I'm going to destroy those who destroy the earth. So I got a funny feeling that he kind of likes the earth because it's his. He's got to get straightened out again. We know that, but he'll do that. We know that. He will do a good job on that one. Now, I'm going to go back to verse 55 for a moment. I mean, up to 55. And it says, and her brother and her mother said, let the damsel abide with us 10 days. Now, that word 10 is 10. That's where that word 10 means 10. It's not a tithe. So that word there is not in the sense of a tenth of something. It is the 10 days. Like the 10th day of the month. It's a specific number. Okay. So just read what I'm saying. Yes, so we gave an idea about the camels, about the gold, and they say 10 weight. Well, it means the tithe of the weight and a tithe of the camel. So we don't know exactly. Well, the gold will be easier to calculate, but we don't know how many camels there really were there. We don't know. It's like, quote, I know you know this, 3 wise men. We have no idea whether there were 2, 3, 20, or 100. It doesn't tell us that. All it tells us is the 3 gifts that came from the wise men. Could be 2. I'll tell you the reason why I think it's 2. He only needs 2 witnesses. He doesn't need 3, but a 3rd one also is a confirmation of it. But I'm saying we don't know those things. It's not important for us to know those things. More important is to know what those gifts were all about. But we won't go there today, because that's New Testament time. Now, verse 60. I think he read his as thousands of 10,000s, I guess it was. All right. Now, the latter part of that verse is what you got to pay attention to. Why would they say, and I'll read it here in this 1611 English, thousands of millions? Why? Now, we know that thousands has to do with clans, military clan or military army. They're like military divisions. How many are there men are in a division? Every country has their own number. We don't know what they are. Doesn't matter. But the object is, you say, those that hate them. So that means that you're going to have blessing Rebecca with the military power, military strength, a huge army that her ancestors, whatever, her Or God, what comes later? Okay. Will increase in numbers, and there will have a powerful army. To do what? What's it say? Take the gates of the enemy. The enemy can't come and go. They can't leave their land unless her descendants or her futures will actually open up the gate to let them to come and go. Otherwise, they shut it. That means military strength and military power. What was it called when they left Egypt? They were called the army. And that's what they call them. They're military people. They learn to become military. When were you supposed to be in the military? What age? 20. When did you get out of the military? Never. You remain in the military for the rest of your entire life. And you're a 20-year-old man. Guess what? Unless you're a Levite. The Levite, you're free. You don't have to go to war. But, I'm sorry, what? He gets to retire. The high priest gets to retire, only. That by us still works. He had to retire at 50, as being a high priest. He can still be a priest, but not the high priest. Okay. All right. Verse 62. Now we go into where Rebecca went there and she saw. And there's something about Isaac. Verse 62. Where was Isaac at? Now, he's about 40 years old now. He's 40 years old, because it says in the next chapter, he married her when he was 40 years old. And he says, Isaac came from the way of the, what? What's the name of the place? Where did we hear that name before? Hagar! What happened during Hagar's time? What took place? That's right. Her son. He says, I heard the voice of your son. Therefore. And so she named the place. Did you know that name? Hagar actually named that place. And now that's where Isaac, moved southward. His father was still where he was up there in Hebron. He was still up there. But he moved south to this location. And it's very interesting, because what does that name mean, though? What? A little bit more than that, that's true. All right, the word is well, better. Got to use that word well. The whole name is Bel Roshit. All right, not Bel Roshit. Bel Lochai. 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 What's Chai? Life. Okay? See, Bel, the life, the water, that was life, sees who? Me. Hagar. So it says that, do you think that's just kind of like a, oh, we use the word living waters, don't we? Now, we have tried to understand the word living waters, right? And it doesn't mean water's been kind of sitting there and getting stale, right? It's got to be flowing like a creek or flowing like a river or coming up from the Erev and coming up. That's living waters. And what does Messiah say we are to become? Like living waters. Out of your belly will come forth living waters. And that means that someone is going to see. Someone's going to see. And it may be somebody you wouldn't want to see. But they do see. And one of them will say, blessed be God, because now I see. Okay? Okay, any more questions about this event? No, she put a veil over her face, remember?
I have a question. I wonder. You said that God causes floods and all the different negative things on this earth, like earthquakes and so on.
Right.
You say God does that.
Yes.
I don't know if I agree with that.
That's okay.
What do you think about
that? What happened, the deluge took place. The earth, says there in Genesis, it was radically separated. The earth itself became disorientated, radically. That much weight, that much water, the water came up from the earth and spread out high. Wasn't just a little trickle of water. Gushes of water came. And when you do that, earth moves. Earth is going to get out of the way. The ground, the physical earth, is going to move. It doesn't stay there. It actually gets out of the way. And when you have all that much massive weight offsetting itself, the weight of the water on this planet is very, very, very heavy. And when it moves, it's going to move something. It moves rocks, it moves trees, it moves mountains. It doesn't stop. It keeps on going. The water will keep on doing its destruction. Where you have ice that's from the North Pole, the South Pole, when you have that much ice, very, very heavy, very, very weight. And as the time goes by, as that water, from the time of Noah, we believe in a society here that we must have had 7, 8, maybe 10 ice ages. You can't prove that at all historically. Every one of them can find they can prove one, but they can't prove 2, 3, 4, 5. They put billions and quadrillions of years that don't exist. Okay? Now, when all that takes place, there's a ring of volcano under the Atlantic, under the Pacific, under the Indian Ocean, and down around all the way through, all the way around the underground, and they still are active. They still are separating. And they'd be able to find, if you're down there, and they found, if they did this research, and they actually would see the Earth one time, down deep down, like 2 or 3 miles down, and then follow it 3 years later, and it separated, it moved. But we don't feel it. It's so deep. Earth is still under this horrible curse from the flood. Earth is still suffering from the flood. We think, oh no, that happened so many years ago. Earth is at peace now. Every time we have a volcano, what do you think? But the pressure comes from that which has been dispersed in the wrong direction. You understand what I'm saying? So I see earthquakes coming because of the results of what he even said was going to happen. The Messiah even said in the latter days we made major earthquakes. That has to come through, not by coincidence, in my personal opinion. Doesn't come by coincidence of Mother Nature moving. That comes from the power of the Creator of heaven and earth moving the earth. And we have, during his death, a great earthquake took place when he died. That's the hand of the eternal Creator of heaven and earth. And the earthquake that took place in Hezekiah's days, they knew that was the hand of God that caused that earthquake. During time of Moses' time, and the earth quaked open, down they came. Acts of God. God is doing that destruction. You understand what I'm saying? So I look at this, and I see earthquakes in the hands of the Creator of heaven and earth, not in the hands of Mother Nature. You understand what I'm saying? Okay, that's my point of view. You don't have to agree with it, but that's my point of view. Yeah. Yes.
Mother Nature is the effort of removing God from the equation by calling it Mother Nature. It is
right.
God.
The term Mother Nature has to do with evolutionary concept.
Right.
And it's totally contrary to truth.